News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning. It is 7 minutes after 8 o'clock on FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. I just got a text from a former neighbor, greatest neighbor of all time, by the way. If you have a chance to live your life sitting right next to Mr. D. Willingham, you'll be better for it, for sure. But it looks like the Cubs are playing their games this weekend at Municipal Park, evidently.
Yeah.
So he sent me a text. It looks like a, does that look like a Cub to you, Ryan?
Yeah, it's just from the head to body ratio in the picture you showed me. Yeah, it looks like a, you know, a yearling or a Cub.
He says
not like a young Cub, but a yearling. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, just it's kind of a distant picture. It doesn't look like a mature bear.
Black bear spotted yesterday between Nassau. That is the neighborhood basically that is right across from Azalea City Golf. It's just
right there,
to the
just west
just to
of
the west of, yeah, yeah, to the tennis center and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And all. And I'm, of course, this is an area where I walked all the time because I would leave the neighborhood and head to south. If I'd done this yesterday, I would have been confronted by a black bear, it appears.
But this is, to me, that was interesting when you sent it. We have a lot of interviews on the, you know, the My Show, Midday Show, and talking with some of the bear folks. And you know, I live in West Mobile County, and got bears come through, you know, our property. Folks in Saraland, my friends up there, is, you know, even more up there, obviously.
They should change the nickname of the high school to the bears.
That would, since that's pretty sharp.
Yeah.
Spartans out, bears in. But yeah, so, I mean, we said there's one 2 years ago, and that got my attention because the closest into town in the city I've ever heard a report was 2 years ago one was hit on Cottage Hill.
Huh.
But this is, I mean, even in the Cottage Hill area, I can link drainages and woods that would be a, you know, way for a bear to move through. Where these pictures are coming, this is, first of all, the furthest in town, in the city limits I've ever seen a picture. This is pretty interesting. East, yeah. I mean, you could say that east in the city, there's probably been one of, you know, Three Mile Creek drainage or something like that. But coming from that direction, the most inside the city limits I've ever seen a picture, and it takes a lot for me. Usually people are like, hey, I see a bear. I'm like, yeah, we've been seeing them our whole lives. But that, I've never seen anything that close. That is,
it's
I mean, that's in Azalea City. It's at the golf course at Municipal Park.
It's dense urban.
Yeah. I mean, there's, now you get the woods over on south, and the woods that come out of the drainage that, you know, where Three Mile Creek comes in and becomes the lake there at Langham Park.
Yeah.
But west of there, you know, Alpine Woods and all the hills, I mean, it's disconnected.
There's
a big area of really not a corridor. There's that. I mean, it's very interesting to me. I'm sending that to the people in the know here because that's something that actually that merits news. Now, though, you know, TV news is running every story like, oh, someone who lives near Eglin Air Force Base had a bear, or somebody in Saraland had a bear in their garbage. This has been common, but that location there is news to me.
And I would know it because I'm telling you, when I got on my hiking, walking kick, it was right in that area. And I know how all those neighborhoods are connected. There's
no, I now look at the full picture. I know exactly where that is. Gosh, that's it's not far off University. I
mean, no.
If you turned off University, like heading to the park.
He's a quarter mile from University, probably.
Yeah, if that.
Less.
If
yeah.
that. Yeah,
yeah,
that's interesting.
Okay, so bear sighting out by University and the neighborhood there, Nassau Street and all that. Okay, so yesterday with Trump, let me begin at the very beginning here. Play you a clip because I was on pins and needles and I thought, did I miss it? And then I saw it was coming up and there was a big delay, and Trump will refer to that as well. You'll hear him refer to that after he is asked an initial question and he responds to it. So it's the National Association of Black Journalists, and the former president and the nominee for this year's presidential election is the guest, and he's unapologetically Donald Trump. I'll say that. Interesting also, not even a courteous golf clap at the beginning, and I was telling Sean, I think there probably was a little peer pressure here. If the guy next to me is not going to applaud, then I'm not going to applaud. But this says a lot about the setting right here as he's introduced to some walk-up music, but little, if any, applause.
We have a lot to get to, and we do not want to waste any time. So let's bring out the former president of the United States, the Republican nominee for president, former President Donald Trump.
Little burst there when he appeared. Otherwise, it's really nothing. And if you thought, okay, he's going to ease his way into this thing here, understanding his environment, understanding the politics at play, understanding that the little clips could be taken and used against him. If that's what you thought, because I'm sitting there thinking, I don't know what to expect here. Maybe a more gentle Trump. That's not what happened, because the woman who introduced him from ABC News also posed the first question. But she did not pose the first question until she framed the question. Mm-hmm. Correct, Sean?
That's correct.
So the framing got him out of his frame a little bit. Ready to hear it?
Let's do it.
I want to start by addressing the elephant in the room, sir. A lot of people did not think it was appropriate for you to be here today. You have pushed false claims about some of your rivals, from Nikki Haley to former President Barack Obama, saying that they were not born in the United States, which is not true. You have told four congresswomen of color who were American citizens to go back to where they came from. You have used words like animal and rabid to describe black district attorneys. You've attacked black journalists, calling them a loser, saying the questions that they ask are, quote, stupid and racist. You've had dinner with a white supremacist at your Mar-a-Lago resort. So my question, sir, now that you are asking black supporters to vote for you, why should black voters trust you after you have used language like that?
Well, first of all, I don't think I've ever been asked a question so in such a horrible manner, a first question. You don't even say, hello, how are you? Are you with ABC? Because I think they're a fake news network, a terrible network. And I think it's disgraceful that I came here in good spirit. I love the black population of this country. I've done so much for the black population of this country, including employment, including opportunity zones with Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina, which is one of the greatest programs ever for black workers and black entrepreneurs. I've done so much, and, you know, and I say this, historically, black colleges and universities were out of money. They were stone cold broke. And I saved them and I gave them long-term financing and nobody else was doing it. I think it's a very rude introduction. I don't know exactly why you would do something like that.
Okay, there you go. Wow.
Trump's trumping.
Top of the first.
Yeah, but I mean, so what benefit, number one, everybody knew this is kabuki theater of some sorts, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That they wouldn't, I don't think the National Association of Black Journalists would expect a question like that to be leveled and him to go, you know, you're right, I'm wrong.
yeah.
Okay, that's not going to happen. Yeah. And I don't think that the Trump campaign would expect to go into this event and not be pressed on this. It's he was the only one there, too. So, and he mentioned that in the thing that I guess Biden and then by default, Vice President Harris were invited as well to this. I don't know if any of the third party or was Robert Kennedy Jr. invited, Jill Stein, Cornel West, any of them invited, I don't know. But he was the only one there and taking the I guess I'm not real shocked that it went down that way.
Yeah, pretty quickly.
But, and it's interesting, too. They go through the things he has said, and some of them you can say, Trump said that, and he needs to defend that. But sometimes some of the things are taken, it calls black journalists, what do you say,
monsters or
whatever it was.
He says to everybody.
He says that to white journalists too. So that's one thing.
That's cherry picking.
So that's fair. Now you can get on the birther stuff, which I was on for a long time, saying I don't know why he kept on with this. But then you go to, what was the other one? That he dined with the white supremacists at Mar-a-Lago. So that whole situation, sometimes I don't know why Trump has unforced errors, but that was an event where Remember who he had? He had Kanye West. So Kanye West came to Mar-a-Lago to visit with Trump, and he brought that guy Nick Fuentes. Nick Fuentes with Kanye West, right?
Yeah.
So he, and you can listen to Kanye talk, and I don't know if he has all his faculties. Very talented musician. I don't know if he has his faculties there, but so they showed up. So Fuentes showed up with Kanye West to the event. Now you could say
Yeah,
Kanye West brought Fuentes.
Okay.
I mean, Kanye West is the bigger person. They're a bigger star.
Yeah.
That's. I mean, I don't think Nick Fuentes got the invite. I think Kanye West got the invite to go to Mar-a-Lago. So they went together. He was there. So that's what they're saying, that he dined at Mar-a-Lago with. I mean, factually.
Correct.
That is true.
Yeah.
What they said. But it leaves out of context some, you know.
It does, but that's what it's going to get.
But some of these things, I mean, some of these things are, like I said, Trump is, I mean, he needs to answer on some of these things. And some of the things, he's never going to get a fair shake. So, I mean, I think there's a mix of it.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so here he is talking about being invited under false pretenses. This is basically still in that same top of the first conversation.
And let me go a step further. I was invited here, and I was told my opponent, whether it was Biden or Kamala, I was told my opponent was going to be here. It turned out my opponent isn't here. You invited me under false pretense. And then you said, you can't do it with Zoom. Well, you know, where's Zoom? She's going to do it with Zoom, and she's not coming. And then you were half an hour late. Just so we understand, I have too much respect for you to be late. They couldn't get their equipment working or something
Mr.
was
President,
wrong.
Mr. President, I would love
think
you
it's
can
a
answer
very
the question
nasty
on your
question.
Rhetoric
well,
and why
I,
you believe
I have
that
answered
black
the question.
Trust you with another
I have
years.
Been the best president for the black population since Abraham Lincoln.
Better
That's
than,
my answer.
Better than President Johnson,
That's my
who
answer.
Signed the Voting Rights
and
Act.
For you to start off a question and answer period, especially when you're 35 minutes late because you couldn't get your equipment to work, in such a hostile manner, I think it's a disgrace.
He was dogging out the equipment.
I know, and he couldn't hear.
Who's got the audiovisual cart? Hey, you are fired.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Harris Faulkner was the only, you know, friendly analyst that was up on the stage, and he couldn't hear her. Like, when she would pose a question to him, she was too over from, and for whatever reason, he was having trouble hearing her questions. So she was the only one that he could have amicable communications with, and he couldn't hear what she was saying.
It amazes me. You know, I talk about it a lot when they get addresses from the state, you know, from legislature or something, but when the governor addresses, mm-hmm. and I've talked about this in the past, I'm like, hey, let's just mic that up better. I'll donate,
yeah.
you know, an hour of my time to go to Montgomery and work on the mics.
That happened one time with yeah. It might have been during COVID, I forget, but it was a disaster.
And you go, you know, y'all knew this was, Trump is the only person in the world, a politico, maybe now that people copy him, you know, got the people, there's a world of stuff that's pretty interesting on the conservative side, the people that copy Trump's cadence and things he said and try to be Trump-like, and then on the Democrat side, you listen to Ben Shapiro that they're talking about that might be the VP for Harris, he does. He speaks like Barack Obama. He
yes.
tries to take the cadence of Obama.
Yeah.
He's like doing an imitation of it. It's amusing. But Trump's the only guy that would be in a situation like that and then go, and by the way, your equipment doesn't work. I mean, there's something. I think people, the people on the left that don't understand any of the appeal of Trump,
mm-hmm.
things like that stand out. Like,
I mean, that's so common, man. That's like, hey, what's
like,
wrong?
Hey, you don't even, your equipment's not working.
Yeah. And it was running late, and I was wondering what was going on. And then finally, they played a series of great music while we were waiting. So I give him a thumbs up for that. The music at the convention was fantastic as we were waiting those 35 minutes for them to get it all straight and bring out Trump. And
Larry with the audiovisual cart. Like, hey, I'm coming. Sorry, another RCA cord here.
But who knew he would bring it up in the middle of that?
Straight Trump, man.
He was mad. And by the way, I'm mad about this, too. So there you go. There's the Donald. It's 821 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings with Dan. And thank you, Sean Sullivan, in for Dalton Norwood. Morning from Dan Brennan and Sean Sullivan in for Dalton Orwig, 825. Going to go to the text line real quick. Sean, what do you see?
Yeah, by the way, too, just for your the picture, which, by the way, I'm now in communication with the bear folks here about that. But Michael says, I thought I saw a bear the other day, but I figured it was just a weird looking dog. I live on that. I live on Nassau too.
Wow.
And he says, we see tons of coyotes. Yeah, a lot of us, and I didn't live too far from you. To the south before, if coyotes are, you know, go check the local news. There'll be coyote stories. And but the bear thing, you know, where I see bears, but I live in West Mobile County, people in Saraland, it's a normal thing.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's, I know that it likes to make evening news, like shocking stuff. But where you have that picture, I've never seen that one
that's
so far into town. I mean, they hit one on like I said, they had hit one on Cottage Hill 2 years ago in the city limits, but I'd never, that's the closest I've ever seen it.
And by the way, just, I mean, I walk that area.
Cool.
I know every inch of that spot. So that's, I mean, for miles, I know that area. So that it's highly unusual, obviously.
All right. From the text line here, a lot to get to. Let's go to the one attacking first, because that's like I like to do. Unnamed texter said, do you know how you sound defending this guy? What has he done for black people? How about you defending the guy? Say, yeah, saying that some of the things there were pretty slanted. I don't know. He thinks he's done a lot for black people. You know, that's Trump. You can disagree. I mean, that part of the interchange, I think, was of interest. I think that's where you get in a debate. And the person questioning him did say, do you think you're a better president? Because she said, I'm the best president ever for black Americans. Yep. Or whatever. And she said, since Abraham Lincoln, or
she said Johnson.
Yeah, and yep. Johnson. So then you debate. That's a normal thing. Okay, well, they did this. He did this. You know, then you have a debate, but it doesn't go that way.
And we are not defending him as much as just analyzing what's going on.
Well, I'm just trying to make sure, you know, we try to pull the lens back and don't just give little clips and put things in context.
Well, that's CBS's job.
Here's James the Sad Troll said, Sean, you bring a sense of equality on political issues. Factually, I agree with you. Great response to the Trump interview. Thank you, James. I mean, it's, you know, it's usually not all binary out there, but everybody is so tribal.
Yeah.
You know, that you got to be, well, it's got to be one side or the other. I'd love to hear from somebody who is, you know, and James is somebody who's not voting for Trump, but you can see that was, you know, loaded against Trump. But how Trump didn't expect that to happen, too. I'm surprised.
Well, the lack of applause as he walked out told you everything, how cold the room was going to be.
Yep. Let's see here. If we talked about the new video showing the shooter run across the roof. Can't let that story die. And I talked about it a good bit before we went on. We may have time, may not. It's not because we're not doing it. We discussed it, and I'll probably have it on the midday show today. But, that
chilling.
Video, I mean, and add that video texter. Add that video to all the other stuff out there. I mean, it's indefensible.
I know.
I mean, at first I said, slow down, Sean, just make sure that, you know, you didn't miss something here, that there's some reason that they didn't. They sucked, is what they did.
They didn't have their A game. They weren't ready to play their best
A game.
No.
They weren't even practice squad, man. Let's see. All right, more than video. Yeah, why? They might, if it doesn't have medicine, they might as well have asked Trump, do you still beat your wife, yes or no? It was a no-win situation, but I think Trump did very well. The crowd was laughing along with him before it was over.
And I do want to say this, too. I think Trump does himself, he shows up back in Pennsylvania last night where he's, to his supporters, he's a bigger god than he was, obviously, there. And some of his rhetoric, and I just don't think it's helpful. I don't think it's helpful to his campaign.
No, but I mean, but everybody who tries to manage Trump ends up
out with the garbage.
Yeah, but also he ends up succeeding in spite of himself. I mean, I agree. I mean, he's the king of unforced errors sometimes. But sometimes we sit there and analyze it and go, well, I can't believe he would say it. And he continues to resonate with folks. So,
yeah. Well, he's got to resonate with certain folks this time around.
Mm-hmm.
You break it down politically, I think he...
And they're all in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Ohio.
Yeah, okay. Some of those clips will be taken and creating a new narrative is what I would say. Then that's on him. 8:30, Rob Holbert, Lanyap on the way. Good morning from Dan Brennan and Sean Sullivan in Fort Dalton, Orwig. On FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. Pretty spirited morning, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I like spirited.
Apologies to Joel and Summerdale. We weren't able to get to your call. You did text us in, and we'll look over that text and read it here coming up. Thank you, man. Just kind of sometimes it's bad timing trying to get through with the stuff we got going on and trying to get to the text line and now trying to get back to the phone line with Rob Hulbert from Lagniappe Mobile. Good morning, Rob.
Morning, guys.
Now, Rob, a couple of things. First of all, I'll get to this gang story because it's a heck of a story in reporting. It's something that's little bits and pieces of this are out there, but I hadn't seen it all coalesced into one story like y'all have at LagniappeDaily.com. But before that, let's go back to what I know has been a discussion last week and the week before, and you wrote about it in Dan the Torpedoes, and that is the core now with more information out yesterday, more messaging out on their Baykeepers' intent to sue. They said they were going to file a lawsuit but haven't filed it to try to stop the dumping of the dredge spoil in the bay, some percentage of it, right? So where do we stand on this?
Well, where it stands right now is Baykeeper has said we have an intent to sue, which is a 60-day window, and they've asked the port and the Corps primarily. It's not really the port, the Corps, to come and talk about it. And the big thing that I think people need to get clear, at least, is they're not suing to stop the deepening and the widening of the channel. That is something that, I think the people who are reacting to it, the business community, the chamber and the port, have put out there. But the chamber, we've sat down and talked to Baykeeper. I've looked at what they've filed. It has nothing to do with the project at hand. It has to do with maintenance dredging for the next 20 years after that and where they are going to dump the dredge materials.
Yeah, and maintenance too, right? You said about maintenance because the project's almost finished. Maggie Oliver was on with me last week, and I don't know the percentage, but she said it would be done by this spring.
Yeah, so it's well underway.
I mean, the concept that this is going to stop the project, nobody has explained how this will stop the project. And nobody has, Baykeeper has said straight up, we've sat down with them and asked them, what's the deal? We're not trying to stop the project. We're not trying to do anything to stop the deepening, widening of the ship channel. It is already mostly done. What we are asking them is to reconsider the way they plan to get rid of 90 million cubic yards of sediment that is going to be dredged out of the channel in the next 20 years to maintain it. Because once you dig a hole in the bay, it's going to keep trying to fill back up. The rest of the bay is like 8 feet, 9 feet deep at best, and then you go to 50 feet. It's going to try to go back to what it is. So, mm-hmm. and the point is, their plan, the Corps' plan, is to just dump it along the throughout the rest of the bay. It's something that isn't done in other places. There's a lot of people who there's a lot of opportunity here to maybe do something different with it. And we're going to listen to the port too. I hope we're going to get to talk to them some about it. And the Corps hasn't really spoken much about it. Basically, it's like, well, we got an approval to do it, so we can do it. And yeah, but there is new information. You have this information from last year with 2023 with Southern Miss coming in and saying, hey, you've got, a bunch of endangered sturgeon that winter in Mobile Bay. But it also, the other big thing, the bigger thing to me personally, is that the fishermen in the community are now saying, we don't want this. We don't want them to do this because we think it is going to further harm our ability to fish and oyster in the bay. And, there is new information here. It's not static. It's not the same. I think there's things at least to get, to me personally, I look at it and say, it's a good idea to at least come back to the table, because this thing has kind of flown under the radar. I mean, it has not been, it wasn't brought up by Baykeeper. It wasn't brought up by media. It wasn't brought up by the port. It's buried in about a 300-page document that the Corps put out, and it's just a few lines that say this is what we're going to do. Yeah. So you had to know where it was. You had to, no pun intended, fish for it. And You know, so I don't think it's a bad idea to at least have a discussion about it. But it does not appear, at least to me, this is an effort in any way to stop this, to stop the port widening. And I think that has been mischaracterized a lot to try to ratchet this thing up a lot, to put a lot of pressure on Baykeeper.
And there's so many other like spokes to this wheel here and things you've said. Now, I've had both sides on, folks from the port, which, like you said, the Corps not speaking as much, but the port is, have said that this was agreed to, 2019. They had the open comment period, and you could say, well, that was 2019, things have changed. But they also said to me that they were in open dialogue with Mobile Baykeeper up to maybe just a couple weeks before this notice of intent to sue, and this hadn't come up. So that they were, in their words,
blindsided.
Yeah, they were shocked by that this kind of came out of nowhere. They thought they were in an open discussion.
Yeah. We'll look and see. I think there's some documentation that they were having discussions about this. I don't know that that has been, I don't know that the term blindsided is entirely true.
Yeah, and that's what Dan's, they didn't use, I don't think they used that word on my show. Well, they just said they were surprised.
I think Bradley Byrne pretty much said it.
I've seen some things that would suggest otherwise. So we're going to work on that. We'll show what we've got when we get to it. We're going to talk to them. I'm not trying to take a position on it and say, hey, this is wrong or this is right so much, except that I think the concept that dumping dredge spoils, along the western shore, which a lot of this would be right along the western shore. I mean, there's some areas that are already pretty shallow right there. I don't know that a lot of the people that live there would want that. Full disclosure, I live on the bay now. So, and I'm not, it's pretty close to where I live. I'm not real excited about the concept of having dredge spoils dumped where I live. I'm sure a lot of other people feel the same way.
Well, and you talk about the fishermen in this, and I'm one of those. I don't live on the bay, but we worry about the having more turbidity in the water as we're trying to work to get the water clearer, because water clearer gets oysters to go be able to survive deeper, and those filter water, and then seagrass. I mean, it's part of a cumulative effect. But I know in discussions on this that there's, it's not 100%. They already, I think it's seven, I don't have the percentages in front of me, but like they are tasked by the Corps, is tasked to use like 70%, and this is just off the top of my head, of it for beneficial use. It's the other 30% that we're discussing, right? Because the 70% of the dredge spoil they've already signed on to not do there. It's, I guess, the 30% or whatever the remainder is that would be put back into the bay.
I'm not sure about that, Sean, because I think there may be a little conflating between the dredge spoil from the widening and deepening versus the dredge from the sediment from the maintenance. So I'm not positive of that. So I know that number is right at some point, but I don't know that necessarily applies to the ongoing maintenance of it. That where that's going to go. So there's two different things going on here, and that's what I think. That's where I think I hate to keep using puns, but the water's getting muddy here. That it's like, you have this deepening and widening, and that dredge material is being taken out, and some of it is a lot of it is being used for various things that are of beneficial use.
Yes.
This question of this thin layer. I'm trying to remember what it is, thin layer disposal that they talk about after the fact when they keep coming back for 20 years. And that's just 20, that's the first 20 years. This will have to be done forever and ever and ever.
Yeah.
So it's not, it's not like it ends at 20 years.
Yeah.
It continues.
Yeah.
So we just say, okay, what we're going to do is every time we have to keep it clean at 50 feet, everything we take out of the bottom, we're just going to take it back and dump it right along the side of it somewhere over here. And to me, it looks like a money issue primarily, I understand, but
that would be on the Corps, Rob, that would be on the Corps, and in my conversation with William Strickland from Baykeeper, he pointed out, I didn't see this is to quote him, and y'all can, but he said he, that's think spoke of at least two projects, one maybe as close as Biloxi, to where the Corps had done it this way where they didn't put any of it back. And so it, there's precedent set
Savannah
for the Corps.
As well.
Yeah, Savannah, that was the other one, right. So the precedent set that the Corps can do this. They are doing this in other places, so why don't, I guess what he was telling me is they want to affect with this lawsuit to say, hey, do like you did in these other places, Corps, just, you know, the money is not coming from the city, not coming from the port, it's coming, you know, from federal dollars, still tax dollars, but from the Corps.
Yeah, and it's also, like, it's banned in Chesapeake Bay to do this. You know, the Chesapeake Bay does not allow this. You know, Savannah is doing it differently. But, you know, it's the same old story we always have in Alabama. Let's do it the cheapest way. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out, is there a – nobody has said, here's a beneficial reason to do this for the Bay. It's a – we've been told we can do it, so we can do it. And, you know, I again, this thing has – yes, it was public comment and all those things. And, you know, we'll take a mea culpa and say, we didn't know about it. I talked to Baykeeper and said, how come this didn't come up at that time? Mm-hmm. And they said, well, it just didn't. You know, different leadership, different things going on at the time just didn't come up, as, you know, did not become a very public thing. I know when I look back at the news articles from the time, there was effort to put forth articles and news about the beneficial uses of the dredge spoils. That there were multiple articles about building up Dolphin Island, doing things like that. There were nobody was saying, hey, and by the way, we're going to take the rest of it and throw it in the bay. So, you know, that didn't come up. I don't know that there's, to me, there hasn't been a really fair and open discussion about this. And I don't see a big problem with having that discussion. And when you look at what Baykeeper's asking for, you know, this kind of, all of a sudden, this talk that Baykeeper's this radical organization and all this kind of stuff, I have never seen them to be that way. They work with big business all the time around here. A lot of the noise coming, like the pushback, has been pretty high pitched in my opinion. But I do think it's a good opportunity to sit down and talk about it, and whether that's something we want. And I put a lot of value in what the fishermen have to say about it. You know, the people who earn a living out there, those are a lot of people who have a lot of jobs out there, and they should have some say in it.
You know, you talk about Baykeeper being working with big business in many regards. Some of the supporters with Baykeeper are big business, or some of the more influential people around here. So that kind of that where's the power play? Where's the
Folks on their board are big business. There's plenty of business involved. I don't know that, you know, again, you know, they've said, you know, just unequivocally, we are not trying to stop the port, the deepening and widening of the ship channel. We're not trying to stop that. And so I get that, you know, if there's a lawsuit filed, maybe anything can happen type of thing. But I think the discussion is, again, really about maintenance dredging, what is going to happen after the fact, not what is going to happen between now and next spring when this project is finished.
Yeah, very interesting. Do you have time? Do you want to jump into the conversation about the...
quickly.
Take a break.
Take a break and come back.
Yeah, can you hang on, Rob? We've got a little more we want to get
to. Sure.
Okay. That's because your Lanyap is so darn interesting. We have to talk about more.
Thanks, Dan. You're interesting too, Dan.
Thank you. I'm very interesting.
Y'all shut up.
It's I think I won most interesting DJ this year. It's 8:49.
You did.
Good morning, 8:53 FM Talk 106.5. Dan, Sean in for Dalton, and for it's a good while, Sean, it was hard to get the word gang related incident out of any city official. Any law enforcement for a while.
Yeah, like and Rob dealt with this as well. I mean, that I do these interviews, and they said no gang activity. And then I remember Rob, I was told by a former Mobile police chief, well, they're not affiliated gangs. I said, so they're not franchises, you know. And then it was like a slow turn up here on admitting that we got a gang problem. And y'all have the best story I've seen on this Scott Johnson story, Bad Rap, about drill rap and the gangs and violence around here.
Yeah, it has come a long way, because I mean, we've been
covering this stuff for 22 years now. And, you know, for the longest time, it was, as you said, there are no gangs. Then it was sort of like, hey, our gangs are mom and pop gangs.
They're not
even franchisees. They're not part of the big business. You know, it's just, we just got guys who made up a gang. And somehow that was, you know, okay. But, I mean, it's the sheriff has come out and full on said, hey, we got an issue with this. It also is interestingly connected with the rap music scene here locally. And so, that's going on nationwide. I mean, there's a big lawsuit in Atlanta with Young Thug, and there's a huge RICO case going on involving rap music and a record label. And so that's the kind of thing that's happening here as well. That sort of the rap is almost sort of being used as a like a recruitment tool.
That's what Scott said in the story, that like it was almost advertising for the individual gangs.
Yeah, kind of that way is what they're telling us. You know, it's like this is the way that, you know, sort of they get it out there. I mean, I think there's a gang called the Fox 10 gang or something, you know, because they're always on the perp walks on Fox 10. It's just like, I mean,
I'm just not funny, but it's funny.
It is kind of funny in a way. It's like, you know, I'm like, you know, just you know, kind of imagining like maybe Bob Gripp involved with that somewhere.
The Kingpin.
Yeah. The power. Yeah, he's back there in the back. Yeah, but I don't know. It's an issue. You know, Sheriff Birch is what we're going to do. He's determined to try to really break this thing up. But as Scott points out in the story, we have some issues in Alabama that our laws are not. We don't have laws on the books that really are gang specific as they do in other places like California and even in Georgia, because where they've had bigger issues with it. So,
and how does that help? Do we know how that helps? Like, because I remember they've discussed it before. What extra law helps you with a gang versus just somebody who's a thug by themselves?
It helps in the same way that any of these special laws do, you know, hate crimes, whatever else. It puts people in jail for a longer period of time. That's what it's meant to do. You know, it's like, okay, well, you know, you shot into a building, that's bad. But if you shot into a building and you're a gang
related
member, it's even worse, you know. So it's just the typical, you know, let's take a crime that is a crime and make it worse.
Double down on it.
Who you are when you do it.
I thought we had some legislation.
That's what Rob's talking about. Okay. Yeah, so that legislation, that's when this came up before. Was it last session before last that went through?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's just one example, but I'm just saying there's gang-specific stuff there's gang-specific legislation or laws in California, and I know in Georgia that we just don't have is what, you know, he was pointing out in the story that there are things that would help. And they basically are aimed at putting people in jail for longer periods of time if they are involved in gang activity.
Well, wasn't that one of our three big things this morning, Sean, the one that you had? Wasn't that related to all of that, the sentencing in the federal?
In the Southall case, yeah, there's some of that. But it's, you know, that was, I think, more, I don't think it had the rap aspect.
Honeycomb?
But that wasn't. This is South.
Okay.
And listen, it's easy to get these all confused. I may be confused, but I mean, this nexus that Scott writes about. Y'all got to read this story because he talks about it specifically, the connections to studios and labels, and when he said that was advertising for gangs. I didn't think about that. That when you're doing this rap song, it's about my gang, right?
Yeah,
this is why you need to join my gang.
Yeah, it's basically, you know, saying, hey, we're doing these things. It's just, you know, it's peacocking to a degree, saying, hey, you know, we're tough, we're doing this, we're taking care of these people. That's a lot of it.
It should make police work a little easier, though, if you have a rap song about how you killed the guy.
But,
you
know, yes.
You would think that it's, you know, if you're like, hey, I'm rapping about, I just robbed four houses last week, you know, that may be, you know, but I mean...
Yeah, I don't remember those sort of lyrics in any Diana Ross and the Supreme songs, for sure.
Not even in any Guns N' Roses.
Well, you got to listen to the B-side.
But those thugs, the Four Tops, look out for them. Side. All right, Rob, thanks a bunch, man.
All right, guys, y'all have a great weekend.
All right, there goes Rob.
Good advertisement for Lanyap right there.
Very much. And lanyapmobile.com. Go check out the story.
Changes every day, so subscribe. 8:59, Jeff Poor Show is on the way.